Mr. Crowley. What went down in your head?
This is Kerry Crowley of the Bay Area News Group. Now back to the Giants pregame show with Marty Lurie on KMBR 680.
All right, gorgeous night for baseball here. Kerry Crowley joins us. What was that?
Marty, that is an Ozzy Osbourne classic, Mr. Crowley.
Okay. Fish, good job of coming up with that. Very good. All right, Kerry Crowley joins us. Boy, great to have you here live here at the Coliseum. Kerry, of course, covers the Giants for the Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, among other outlets. Well, last night, as I said, the Giants, and when I opened up, I mean, you can't play a better game than that against a tough A's team. Giants played great last night.
And that's really what Bruce Bochy said after the game. He said it was one of their best wins of the year, and you look at what they did. They got the starting pitching they needed from Rodriguez. Maranta comes in, gets out of a jam in the seventh. Bullpen closes the door. They add on late. And Marty, we actually saw this team manufacture runs in the eighth inning.
Alan Hansen. The man they said who cannot bunt. Remember that?
Yes.
I begged for a bunt in one of those games, and I remember I said it, and I was deluged with people. And people in the know, some of your brethren, some of the sports writers said, he can't bunt. He doesn't know how to bunt and all that kind of stuff. I said, look, if he's 25 years old and his game is a speed game, plays all over the place, he better learn how to bunt. And he has worked on it. But he did lay down a bunt last night, and it led to a run.
Beautiful. It was first and second. Yeah. Nobody out. He lays it down, third base side. And then Andrew McCutchen steps up, hits a deep fly ball. It's a sack fly. They get a run. And that's what they need to do, especially late in games during the second half, is add on when you have a lead, because there's been too much pressure on this bullpen during the first half.
A lot of good things last night. And as we get to game 100 tonight, and my mantra is get to this, survive July. You know, I've said that, and so far they are, but these next eight games, the first one is in and the Giants got it, will tell a story. But I thought last night Ryder Jones comes up, Brandon Belt's got Augie, the new baby, after Augie Garrido, his coach at Texas. He'll be back today, but Ryder Jones comes up, and let me tell you something, he crushed the ball as we sit here in this booth down. I'm looking right down the right field line. It looked like it was going to go over the foul pole. And hit the foul pole. That pole was hit hard.
Yeah, and Ryder Jones, a guy who started his Giants career 0-17 last year, right. Just felt immense pressure, even in a season that was already lost when he was called up. Comes up, strikes out on a breaking ball in the dirt, and he thought, maybe this is what Ryder Jones is. Yeah. Second at bat against Edwin Jackson, and he unties the game with that shot, soaring shot off the right field foul pole. And you were right. It was very high up there. It looked like it had legs for the second deck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I thought it was going over the pole, and then... You know, there's one of those moments in baseball, and, just to go back into my past of High Line.
Yes.
I used to go to High Line in Miami all the time. Even as a high school kid, we used to sneak in. And the game of High Line is a three-wall game, of a ball that goes very quickly, and you would gamble on it. But if the ball went off the court and hit the wood, you knew it. You heard it. And there was a sound you didn't want to hear if that was your guy who threw it. You didn't want to hear that. Somehow last night when it hit the foul pole, it's one of those moments instantly you know what happened. I love it. I love when that happens.
Yeah, they're some of the best home runs to watch. You know, you think fair or foul, and then the doink noise that you hear, the ping, depending on the foul pole, and it's great to watch. It's very cool, and you're right. It's a great baseball moment.
Yeah, I loved it last night. All right, so Ryder Jones knocks one out. You knew it's going to be a decent night when that happens. But then Sandoval. Again, with the game in the balance, and you needed to get that run to get the Giants ahead and all that kind of stuff, he knocks one out. And it made me think of Sandoval, Kerry, and I'll bring this up. Sandoval, you look at the good stories, which you need when you're going to have a team that has a shot at game 100 here to go four games over 500. You need people to jump up and have seasons. He has had a season, and in his career as a Giant, and I know it was checkered at the end, so to speak, but he's had a lot of big home runs and a lot of big hits as a Giant, and he got one last night.
And you know what's so interesting to me about Pablo Sandoval is 2008 to 2014, that was the Sandoval you expected. In the big moments, you wanted him at the plate to come up and deliver for you. Since coming back to the Giants last summer, you're not really sure what Sandoval's going to bring you in these big moments. But lately, and basically since probably the middle of May, he's been a guy who's been so clutch for this team. He's come in critical situations. Evan Longoria goes down. He's played third base. Brandon Belt out with the appendectomy. Pablo steps in at first base. They need a second baseman earlier this year in May. Pablo goes out there and plays second base. The versatility, the willingness to put the team ahead of himself has just been such a bonus for the Giants this season, and now has as many home runs since coming back to San Francisco as he hit during his entire tenure with the Red Sox.
14.
Yes.
I saw you tweeted that last night. Kerry Crowley with us. That was a good tweet last night. KO underscore Crowley on Twitter for Kerry. Boy, there's so much to talk about. And number one, it's exciting to get to this part of the season because, as I say, teams disappear or they solidify. And we'll see what happens with Philadelphia, Atlanta, Arizona. Milwaukee is all of a sudden lost seven in a row. So there's a lot of teams sort of on the brink. Washington, for sure. We'll talk about them, I'm sure, during the show today. But when you get to the Giants, there's things that have to happen to put you in at least a position to say, I got a shot. And one is the surprises. Sandoval is a surprise. I think Hanson has been a surprise, and he got the bunt down last night, and he adds that element of speed. Duggar has done a nice job in center. He looks, when the ball's hit the center field, he doesn't go, oh my God, where is it?
It's not your giant center fielders of the last three or
not
four years.
Not at all. It's not, oh, where is it? I can't see it. Oh my God, can someone help me? This guy, when the ball is hit, he goes and gets it. It's a pleasure to see him. I hope he can hit. And he's getting a big hit every day, scoring some runs. But the guy I want to talk about is Reyes Maranta. And he was up here last year, and he was the Sandoval twin. He looked like him, and everyone kind of made fun of him, you know, with the body. But this guy this year has been just outstanding. Outstanding.
And it's really been interesting to watch, Marty, because in spring training, there was almost no shot he was going to make the team. His ERA was in the sevens. He only had four appearances, was one of those early options to AAA Sacramento. And you thought, okay, maybe Maranta comes up in June, July. Maybe that's when you'll see the 98-mile-an-hour heat. And since the beginning of the regular season, when Mark Melancon went down with that injury, he was on the roster. He survived all the other guys, the Josh Osiches, the Stephen Okerts, Derek Law, Pierce Johnson. Maranta has been that steady force in the bullpen, and now he's the fireman. He comes in with runners on base and puts out the fire. He's done it all year, a sub-2 ERA.
And it's funny you say that. I love the phrase fireman when we talk about the bullpen. When I grew up, the Angels, we called them the arson squad. When they would come in, bad things happened. And honestly, I mean, Corey Guerin is now in Texas, and I wish him the best. But when he came in, he unloaded the bases, and those runs were charged to pitchers that he was replacing. Maranta is just the opposite of that. Last night, and we're going to get to Derek Rodriguez in a second, but Rodriguez, you know, had the short lead. It's 3-1. So as soon as somebody got on, here comes Bochy in the seventh inning to get him. And Maranta came in, and within five pitches, he had ended the inning.
Yeah, it's outstanding what he's able to do with inherited runners. And you draw the comparison to Corey Guerin. They're the opposite pitchers. Yes, they're both right-handed relievers who are throwing in the sixth or seventh innings. But Maranta is a guy who the base is loaded. The bases could be loaded and no one out, and Bruce Bochy would turn to him, and the Giants would still think that they have a chance because he's got strikeout stuff. He throws 98. That slider is devastating, and we've seen Buster Posey call it. We saw it last week in that big win over the A's on Friday night, the one game that they took from them that series. And the one thing that's really underrated about Maranta, in my opinion, is his durability. He's the one guy in this bullpen that can pitch back-to-back days. He can go 3 out of 4 and not lose too much.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Of course, when he came in the Bumgarner game last Friday night, that was another exciting moment at AT&T Park. Bumgarner takes the lead into the seventh inning. He loads the bases, and Bochy comes to get him. And Maranta goes 2-0. And I have Matt Hergis on. I hope I get to him today. I said, Matt, what were you thinking when Maranta went 2-0? And, of course, just throw a strike. As Hergis said, you don't want to ever get into a position where you have to throw a strike. So you want to avoid that 3-0 with the bases loaded where you better throw a strike. And he said 2-0, he threw a strike, and Hergis took a breather, a sigh of relief when that happened. So, all right, Maranta's been terrific. And Kerry and I just looked up the National League rookie pitching leaders, and Maranta is tied with Hirano of Arizona for the most appearances. How about that? 46.
And there's the durability we're talking about. I believe he leads the Giants in appearances.
Good point. Very good point. The other thing Kerry and I talked about, and that is Derek Rodriguez. What can you say about this guy? I mean, you know, we've said it, how he belongs and all that stuff. What did you see last night?
I think he's truly emerging as a Rookie of the Year candidate. And you look at, it's kind of a weak rookie class around the National League, but you go up and down those rookie pitchers, and he leads them in ERA. He's got 5 wins. Every time he gets on the hill, you feel like the Giants have a chance. And it hasn't necessarily been that way for guys coming up through the system the past few years. And here's a minor league free agent, spent 6 years in the Twins organization, 4 years as a pitcher. They didn't re-sign him. He comes to spring training, shows a bit of a flash of potential when he faces the Diamondbacks, goes to Sacramento, dominates, and ever since he's come up, he's looked poised, he's looked mature, he's looked confident, and Ryder Jones said it last night after the game. When Derek Rodriguez is on the mound, the Giants think every hitter is going to be an out, and they feed off of that.
Oh, interesting. You know, and the other thing about Rodriguez, I say, how will it turn out? Of course, as Kerry says, he's earned run average now for Rodriguez, leads the rookies in the National League 2.72. There was a time that the Rookie Award was one for Rookie Pitcher of the Year and a Rookie Hitter of the Year. And for Rookie Pitcher of the Year, I think, you know, we'll see how this turns out. We're only at July, where are we, July 21st mm-hmm. today. Suarez is still in the mix. Flaherty is in the mix. Molly, I
believe.
Yeah, Cincinnati is obviously still in the mix. But if it finishes up for Rodriguez, he may be the best rookie pitcher in the league.
I think so. And Jack Flaherty of the Cardinals is the guy everyone thought was going to have the great season. But I think St. Louis has been too cautious with him earlier this year. We saw him pitch at AT&T Park, and he only lasted about 3 innings. As soon as there was the first sign of trouble, Matheny came out to get him. It's not like that for Derek Rodriguez.
Right.
He could have trouble like he did in the second inning last night, was getting hit around. And he's got this calm about him that leaves Bruce Bochy to leave him in games. And I think Bochy has a little more confidence in Rodriguez than he does in Suarez. We've seen that kind of play out over the past 2 months.
I agree. He looks like his stuff stays together a little bit later in the game than Suarez. And once Suarez starts getting funky in the sixth inning, it's time.
Yes.
This guy, Bochy gives him the sixth inning, and then seventh inning is his time. He's almost like a comic book character out there. He's almost like Batman out there.
Yeah.
Explain that one.
Oh, I mean, that hair, you know.
But he's got the tattoos.
I saw something last night, and he wears a Superman shirt in the clubhouse, ironically, all the time. But I saw something last night, and it was a mix of Tim Lincecum and Jeff Samardzija, and that's what you get with Derek Rodriguez. And I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, he's got the Batman tattoos all over, and Andy Bagley wrote a great story in The Athletic about it today. About this, about Rodriguez and the tattoos. He's Batman.
Yeah.
You know, he's got it all over him, on the mound, over his left arm. So that was him last night. What about Melanson? You know, because this is a game of bullpens, and the Giants are going to have to monitor innings here. Cueto tomorrow, maybe Holland backs him up. But what do you think of Melanson last night?
The stuff's been better over the last month, I think. I don't know if we'll ever see the same Mark Melanson that the Giants signed back after the 2016 season, the guy that they expected to close the door at the end for games. Who knows if we'll see him go back-to-back this season, but I think that the stuff is there for him to be a solid 7th or 8th inning guy, and right now the Giants will take it. Sure, they're paying $20 million, and you know, that it's a contract that hasn't worked out for them to date, but if you just look at him in the context of his role, I think it's something that he can continue to do for the rest of the season.
Do you think, again, I say over these next 8 games, you know, we got Milwaukee, we got 2 here and 2 with Seattle, over these next 8, depending on how it turns out, if it's great or not great, not in the middle, what do the Giants do when they get to July 31st?
Well, like you said, it has to be what happens over these next 8 games. If you fall 6-7 games out in the wild card, 6-7 games out in the division, the Dodgers start to take off, you might look to sell off a Sam Dyson or even a Will Smith, who could probably bring back a ton of prospects right now because he's a closer, he's a left-hander, and he's been dominant this season and has shown no signs of the wear and tear from the Tommy John. But the Giants may not have enough room to add any meaningful pieces, but they could bring back a starter. They might get a reliever. I mentioned the name to you before the show, Kyle Barraclough, who's on a major league minimum salary over in Florida. They'd probably have to give up a lot, and I don't see them being able to do that. So it's probably going to be a situation where the Giants just hope that the team that they've constructed plays much better during the second half of the season than it did during the first, and they have guys who can do that.
I think that's the issue. And you wrote a nice story this week about the 5 things that went right, wrong, or what's got to happen. Maybe you could talk about that just a little bit. But you look at Posey, Crawford, Belt, McCutchen, Longoria, Gorky's, you want to put him in there. They've got to do it. You can add all the trimmings you want in bullpen guys and extra guys here and there. But if those guys don't do it, it ain't happening.
If you're 1-6 in the lineup can't get it done,
it's
then what is one or two more, you know, incremental
Bear
pieces?
Do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to have any games to save,
right,
or he's not going to have any eighth innings to pitch that are meaningful.
And that's the story.
If your hitters aren't doing it.
Yeah, so. Summarize your article just a little bit. It was very good.
Well, I think that they need to play the hot hand right now, and maybe, you know, you don't bring back Jeff Samardzija right away from the disabled list.
Yeah.
Maybe you force him to prove himself with two rehab starts and prove he's completely healthy. You ride Derek Holland for a little bit, or you give Chris Stratton an opportunity. I think one of those guys could pitch on Wednesday in Seattle. And Samardzija may need a rehab start after getting the PRP injection. You also need to maximize Madison Bumgarner during the second half. There's 7 off days combined in August and September, but have Bumgarner pitch every fifth day. He's got, what, 50 innings on his arm to this point in the season? We know he's an
49.
Absolute horse. We know he's a horse. You want to win with your horse on the mound. So do whatever you can to give Johnny Cueto, Derek Rodriguez, and Andrew Suarez their extra days of rest. Don't do that with Madison Bumgarner. And the other key is stay off the disabled list, because this is an older roster and they need to use those off days wisely with these guys. You know, maybe they've got a little more depth when Evan Longoria comes back and Hanson can spell guys, Pablo Sandoval can spell guys, maybe Joe Panik takes a few more days off during the second half. But be creative. Don't allow the norms that have driven the first half of the season to drive the second half of the season, because I don't think that's going to be enough to get it done.
All right, very good. Kerry Crowley with us. Bochy had a little speech for the team last night.
He did.
What happened?
Well, all I know is we got kicked out of the clubhouse a little early yesterday, and he needed to fire the guys up. He needed to ignite some fire in the bellies of the hitters on this team, because the pitching staff has been so good since the end of May, when it was so awful, as we saw throughout that month. But ever since then, they've been a top 3 staff in the league. We continue to see it. And it's time for the hitters to produce. Buster Posey said it after the game. They know it. These are veterans who've been around. They know what it takes to win.
Yeah.
And I think hearing it from Bruce Bochy, who has been there, been to the postseason, knows what it takes to win, to re-inspire these guys is important heading into the second half.
Yeah, we've done it before. We've gone down this road before, and you have to step on the gas at some point. And he challenged the ball club.
And Brian Sabian did it back in 2010.
I remember.
And they were in a similar position. They were hanging outside, kind of on the peripheral of the wild card and the division race, and Sabian challenged the team.
Well, they got a pitch. You know, I always look at the starting pitching ERA vis-a-vis the league, and they're 10th now. 9th is Arizona. They're just 0.06 of a point behind 421, the 415. Then comes Washington, 4.06, and the Cubs at 4.02, so the Giants at 4.21. So they're going in the right direction. That's got to get better. And if they can pitch, that will get better. So we'll see what goes on there. What do you think about tonight? I was talking about this atmosphere tonight, and it's so beautiful out here now, and the A's are loosening up to our left. The Giants are starting to come out on our right. It looks like Suarez may be throwing a bullpen down there right now. What do you think? What do you expect tonight?
Yeah, I'm fired up for tonight. I think this is going to be one of, if not the best atmospheres we see all season for the Giants. And, Marty, I said to you walking in, you couldn't pay me to sit up on Mount Davis up there, but the A's have somehow found 8,000 willing fans to go up there, and it's going to be electric.
Yeah.
That's going to be extremely exciting to see at this ballpark tonight, and this is what Bay Area baseball is all about. Two teams in the race, that's how it should be.
Yeah, it should be. I will talk, Vince Catrone is going to join us a little bit later. I love talking ball with Vinny. And realignment, because Manfred talks about the DH for the National League. All this stuff is out there somewhere, because baseball is different. It's a game of home runs, strikeouts. We saw in the All-Star game. I would love to see these two teams in the same division. I would.
Well, John Miller and I don't like driving across the bridge.
No,
I'll
I
say
understand.
That.
John was in a monumental traffic jam last night.
But I will say it would be very cool. And another thing that I would like, hey, let's put the Mariners in that division too. Giants and Seattle get something going there. I'll take the trips up to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's the old Pacific Coast League.
Yeah.
You know, you could recreate it, really. And I think baseball's going to do it. All right, Kerry, great to have you with us. Pleasure. We'll see you tomorrow tomorrow morning as well. And this is going to be something tonight, a good matchup, Bumgarner and Cahill.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the atmosphere that we're going to see, and it would have been 56,000 regardless of who's pitching. But the fact that we're seeing two veterans in Bumgarner and Cahill go out there just adds to the entire event that we're about to witness.
When's the last time the Giants played before 56,000? Now, I know in the A's-Giants series, there's a press release about some of the big crowds they've had, but this would be the biggest. I'm wondering the last time these guys, because Mount Davis has been tarped up for a while, when the last time the Giants played before a big crowd like this? This could be a little different for the Giants tonight.
Maybe the playoffs in either 2010 when they were in Atlanta, Turner Field. I think they could fit 56 to 58,000 there. Right. I'll go and do some research, and I'll send you a text.
All right. All right, yeah. Kerry, thanks so much, as always.
All right. Have a good one, Marty.
All right. That's Kerry Crowley. So my daughter Bonnie and son-in-law Greg are driving up from L.A., and they're going to be up here, so I know they're listening to the show on the way up, so drive carefully, and you will be up here tomorrow, and you'll be able to hear or see Game 3 of this Bay Bridge series. All right, more coming up right here on the Sports Leader.